Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Are you looking for a better way to play player props or daily fantasy sports? Well, look no further than Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the leading over-under daily fantasy game. Why? Because it's so easy to use and win. You can make your picks in under 30 seconds and win up to 10 times your money in one day. Right now, we have a special offer for our viewers and listeners of Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. All you got to do is sign up now and use the promo code BACKPACK. Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. That's right. They'll match your first deposit up to $100. So join the over 150,000 others who found a better way to play and download the Prize Picks app today. To Tell Podcast episode 221. We are back after a week off. Dexter Henry, Brian Fonseca here. I had to take a little bit of time away, Brian, last week. You know, relax the mind of spring break. Took the daughter up to Legoland. Had some fun there. You know, she was moving bricks, Legos.
Look, Pusha T just dropped this album. You can't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, he literally just came out on Friday, which we probably should talk about at some point.
We should. We probably should.
We haven't texted about that, but like, I got to give it a couple more listens. I'll put it to you.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But it was a good trip up there. I know you are in a good mood, and we're gonna have a lot to talk about this episode because Brian's heat at the time of recording this is up 3-1 in the first round against the Atlanta Hawks. He's going to say it's not his team, but we all know.
Honestly, it should be a sweep. It should be 4-0 at this point. They gave up one game, and they've been whooped. Look, all I'm saying
here we
is,
go. Here
all,
we go.
Look, this is all I'm going to say because we have to get to our guests.
Yes.
We want to keep our guests waiting. All I'm going to say, because we may or may not get to this later in the show.
Yes.
Mad people were just like, oh, Trae Young's best player in the series, whatever, whatever. And I'm like, whoa, according to whom? Does anyone not care about defense here?
Well,
and I'm just saying, the way things have played out, the supposed best player in the series has been in jail the entire time.
He has.
37-year-old P.J. Tucker has been one of these people locking his ass up.
See, and this
P.J. Tucker's been very good defensively. So I don't mean to like say that that's a bad thing or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But I think a lot of people thought that he would have put P.J. Tucker on the highlight now, and that hasn't been the case.
That has not been the case. We will get to that later. But for this episode, we're going to talk a little bit of football.
Yes.
NFL
draft week.
That's right. NFL draft week coming up on Thursday. Everybody's excited about that. The time you get excited about who's going to be the best prospects, who's going to say that this player is going to be great, but then they end up not being great. So
who's going to write the racist scouting report?
Yeah, as happens all the time. Yeah. So to talk about the NFL with us, we got somebody here. I'm really excited about him coming to the show. I think this is a great opportunity that we have. Andre Coleman, 5 years in the NFL as a wide receiver. He was a damn good kick returner. We're going to get into that as well, too. He also coached on the college side, being a wide receivers coach for the Texas Longhorns. He did that for about 3 seasons. Andre joins us now. Andre, what's up, man? Welcome to
what's
the
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing,
what's up, man? We are good. We are good. How are you?
I'm blessed, man. I appreciate you, boys. Appreciate you guys having me, man.
Nah, also, man. Also, let's mention, Yes. Former third round draft pick. Do I have that right?
Third round draft pick, San Diego Chargers. Actually, you know what, man? I got drafted by the New England Patriots, right?
Ah.
And traded to the San Diego Chargers. And I was on an airplane, didn't know any of it.
Oh, damn. So wait, hold on.
Here's where we're starting.
You got to tell us this. You got to tell us the story. So how did you find this out? You get off the airplane. How did this all go down?
Draft day, man. Draft day. It was one of those situations where I thought I was in a good good situation. Thought I'd be drafted on day one. And I sat there all day, man. So, you know, one of the things I suggest for guys going to the draft, don't sit around and wait for your name to be picked. It is a long, long, miserable day if it's not picked early.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, man. So the next day I was frustrated. I jumped on a plane and I was going back to Manhattan, Kansas, right, to K-State to work out. And I actually got drafted while I was at the airport. And when I landed, I had been drafted and traded to the San Diego Chargers. So it was a kind of a crazy. I was happy that I got drafted. But
let me ask you this too, Andre, on that note. Did you want to go to New England or were you really happy that you got to go to San Diego? Because I feel like I'd be happy to go to San Diego.
Listen, man, when you get that opportunity, when it's an opportunity for you to fulfill a lifelong dream, a lifelong goal, you don't really care where you're going. Like that to me, that's a little bit prima donna to say, I want to go to the spot. I was happy to be drafted. I was happy to play in the NFL. I was happy to be able to, you know, change my life, man.
Yeah, no doubt. You know exactly what that is like. And you know what it's like for a lot of these young men this week. So let's go a little bit before that, Andre. You played 5 seasons in the NFL. You played for the Chargers, as you said. You also played for the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Seattle Seahawks. So you had a nice career there. But when you go back to preparing for the NFL draft, what was that like for you in the months from deciding you're going to try to do this professionally? You know, combine, workouts, meeting with teams. What was it like in your preparation leading up to the draft?
So now, man, everything, you know, back then, you know, we're a little bit more old school, right? I stayed at K-State. I worked out with our head strength coach who I felt like, you know, knew me the best and prepared me the best. But nowadays, you know, you got guys that are traveling and they're hanging out, you know, they're working out with these trainers and everything is really fancy now. But you know, everybody's process is different. I mean, you're spending, you know, from the time the season's over, I mean, you're spending time preparing for the combine. And so you're doing very specific drills because you want to get, you know, you want to put up good numbers, you know, have a pro day that you want to shine, you know, on. But it's really a long, you know, waiting game. You know, I got drafted by the Chargers. I got drafted by the Patriots and traded to the Chargers. And I don't think I talked to either one of them in the process leading up to the draft.
Wow.
So
wow.
you just never know, man. Like you just got to be prepared for your name to be called. And when it's called, you got to be ready to, you know, step up.
How did that work out? Like you didn't, so they didn't, you didn't know they were scout. You didn't know that you were being scouted by them at all.
No. No, I did. So, you know, all 32 teams will come by. All 32 teams will talk to you. But, you know, if you're not a top, you know, a really a high pick, right, you know, they're not courting you leading up to the draft. I mean, it really is a waiting game. I mean, they'll reach out to you, make sure they got the right contact information, make sure they got the right phone number. But, you know, if you're not probably one of those first day guys for sure, you know, there's not a whole lot of courting in the process.
Damn, that's a lot of in terms of the waiting game and just waiting, you know, to hear and not knowing and the uncertainty, you know, and even back then, just a different time of that, you know, you're right, it's a different game now. But then you've also worked on the college side. You worked with kids at Texas, and you've worked with guys who probably are trying to get into the draft where you were and trying to play in the league. How do you as a coach, with all your information from playing the league, prepare those kids for playing in the NFL and get ready for draft day?
Yeah, man, I started off at Youngstown State. I was there for 3 years, and then I moved on to Kansas State. I was there for 6 years, which is my alma mater, and was here at the University of Texas for the last 3 seasons. And for me, man, you know, when I, you know, day one, you know, my mentality, because that's where I've been, I'm already trying to prepare you, right? And, you know, it's preparing you, you know, on the field, and it's preparing you off the field, right? And as you get a little bit older, obviously, you know, you start talking about the NFL thing. But, you know, I try to be a truth teller to my players. Right. My guy's going to tell you that I'm going to shoot him straight and that I'm going to keep it real. And sometimes it's brutal honesty. And the reality is less than 1% of the guys are going to make it to the NFL, man. So right. I'm talking to these guys about, hey, man, you got to make sure you get your degree. You got to make sure you network. You got to make sure you know, build relationships while you're here in school. Because, I mean, you can make it because I did. I'm not saying that you can't, but the chances are slim, you know. And, you know, everybody's got this they got this fantasy of going to the league. You know, just because you go to a BCS or a Power Five school, and that's not the case, man. It takes a lot of work, takes a lot of commitment, takes a lot of dedication, and quite frankly, most guys just not dedicated and committed to doing it. It sound good, right? It sound good going to the league, but right. The commitment and the work that it takes, most guys ain't about that life.
Mm. What would you say are the biggest differences now in preparing for the draft compared to like before when you were doing it? Because now I feel like throughout the course of my life, and I'm 28. So throughout the course of my life, the draft has become a bigger and bigger deal, like seemingly every season, right? Like I remember specifically in 06, I remember the Reggie Bush draft, Mario Williams, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember that being a pretty big deal on TV. But now, like the entire process starts much sooner. You have more guys coming out with mock drafts and things of that nature, people who know shit, people who don't know shit. And like it seems like there's more of a spotlight and more pressure now. So I don't know. Could you speak to that, like the differences and similarities?
Yeah, that's a great question, bro. I think, man, that everything is, you know, with the information age, with the social media age, right. Everything's just bigger now, right? Everything is a production. That's probably, you know, one of the things that I learned, you know, in getting back into the game from a coaching perspective is that there's a lot of perception, right? There's a lot of what you see. And then there's a lot of the stuff that's really going on behind closed doors, man. And so, you know, when I played, you know, I didn't understand the business of the NFL, you know, and now that I'm a little bit older and maybe a little bit more mature from a coaching aspect, there's a lot of politics behind a lot of stuff, man. And, you know, it's frustrating because I think it's taken the college game, you know, that's when it used to be fun, right? You used to play for something, right? You play for your guys, you play for your buddy, you play for the guy to the right, to the left of you. And now, especially with this name, image, and likeness deal in college, man, it's much more of a business, even at a high school level now, right? Kids are getting recruited and they want to know what kind of NIL deals they're getting. They're talking about money. And so it's really changed the game, you know, and if players don't have the right guidance around them, you know, it could be difficult, man.
I think you made an interesting point there, Andre, on that, because I'm curious about how you feel as a coach who've watched that too with somebody who's played. The NIL stuff, I'm sure it sounds to me like you – I don't want to put words in your mouth. You're glad to see these kids get their money, but you can also see how it could be a problem or sort of distraction in a way, which I've always thought that too. We can see that. I want these kids to get the money. Please get their money, because we know the NCAA is not doing right by some of these kids in a way. But have you seen that be a distraction to kids in coaching or around that circle? Is that something that concerns you going forward as a coach working with kids in that way?
You know, I've seen it. And again, if you don't have the right guidance and the right circle around you, I mean, quite frankly, man, a lot of these guys, 17, 18 years old, they ain't ready to handle it. I wasn't ready to handle it when I was 17, 18. So, you know, you give a 17, 18-year-old, you know, a bunch of money, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, $100,000, and you know, more money, more problems, right? They got to deal with, you know, some of these guys are living better than their families, right? So that's stressful, right? That could be different. You know, some of these guys, you know, just, you know, they just don't understand, you know, a lot of it is given to these guys. Right. And, you know, things have to be earned. And so a lot of times, man, you deal with a little bit of attitude. You deal with, a generation that feels entitlement, you know, so. You know, it could be frustrating, man. That's why, you know, it's a blessing for me right now to be able to have a little transition, a little bit of a break, because I was really like, you know, not burnt out, but you know, there's a lot that's going on in the game, and the game has changed a lot, you know, in the last year. And quite frankly, they don't really know how to regulate it yet, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so, you know, it's creating some issues, you know, from a standpoint.
Well, you saying that is actually a good transition to what I wanted to ask you next, which was about the state of football, and it could be college and the pros. You could tell me both. Do you like where the game is at? There are a lot of differences in the game. Before we got on here, you, I, and Brian were talking about, you know, lack of, you know, kick returns. We'll get into that as well too. But the game is very different than when you played it. What do you like about the game that's better now, or the things that you don't like about games? Tell me, what do you think about the state of football?
I mean, I understand the game, you know, the game is starting to get watered down a little bit. I mean, let's keep it real, right? Like no kick returns, right?
Yeah, you know, like Brian is totally going to rock with you on this. Just want to let you know.
But it's real though. Like, you know, there's like, how can you tackle somebody without using your head? Like, tell me how that possible, right? And so I understand we want to teach proper technique, proper fundamentals, you know, to protect guys from injuries. But the game is getting, you know, a little tad soft right now, you know, and, you know, I want to make sure that we keep it exciting, man, and you know, make it the game that we all have grown to love.
Yeah, there's a lot that's taken from it. Go ahead, Brian. I know you want to say something to Andre. Go ahead.
No, but it's interesting because, like, we have these same conversations about, like, just societally, a lot of things are skewing in that direction. And you could even bring it back to another sport, basketball, where it's a very different game, more finesse than it was, like, at one point. But what I wanted to ask, Andre, was, like, just we're not seeing kick returns now. Basically, like, they, you know, they move the line up so that it's easier to just kick it out of bounds. We're barely seeing punt returns now and things of that nature. And like, me and Dexter love Dante Hall, who was a return specialist at some point. Devin Hester, who's awesome at it. And you were one of the best kick returners of the 90s. You had some 1,000-yard seasons, and it feels like we're never going to see that again. And people say that, look, it's dangerous, but it's also part of the game. And the entire game is dangerous. So I'm wondering, where's the sort of line here? And do you feel like they're sort of getting rid of, like, the 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", receiver / return specialist who can just be a game changer on any given return?
Well, yeah, you know, yeah, that's happening. But, you know, at the same time, you know, from a protection standpoint, the league's trying to protect itself as well, right? Like, there's a lot of injuries. You know, when I play, man, like we take a shot, you know, you get your bell rung, we call it. I mean, we ain't lead a game for concussions, right? You know, but, you know, now it's like, you know, got to take a tough hit. You know, it's concussion protocol. It's, you know, and I get it. Don't get me wrong. You know, you want to make sure that you keep guys safe. But, you know, it's a physical game, right? And, you know, and you run the risk of you know, serious injury if you play it. I was fortunate enough to not have any you know, major injuries or surgeries, you know, but I can definitely feel the licks, you know, years later.
Yeah, the game is what it is, and I'm with you on this, Andre, right? Like, you got to protect the player's safety first. We don't want to see players get concussed. We don't want to see the major injuries, but I'm with Brian on it too. Taking certain elements out, like the kick returning, has made the game, I would say, not as exciting for me, right? It's not really about the physicality of the hits, but I love the good, great kick returners, like Brian mentioned. I love seeing that as part of the game. But you also, you know, you're a wide receiver, played the position of wide receiver, coach guys playing that position. What makes a wide receiver elite at the NFL level? You've seen a lot of the greats, and you know, you've coached some guys that go into that. What makes the wide receiver elite at that NFL level?
Well, you know, what I think makes a wide receiver elite, it's not necessarily the physical aspect. Yeah, you got to have some good size. You got to be able to run. You got to be able to catch. Those are the basic things that you got to have as a wide receiver. But I'm a firm believer that I think it's the 80-20 rule, right? And 20 and the 80 is obviously the mental side of the game. And there's a lot of guys who are great athletes, who are fast, who are big. You know, and you see him on the hoof and you say, wow, this guy's a player, but you know, he can't line up right, he's running the wrong route. And those are things that people from the stands necessarily, you know, don't see. And so I don't care how good you are, if you're not running the right route, if you're not in the right place, I can't depend on you. And so a lot of it at the next level is mental. And you know, and quite frankly, it's about investing the time, right? It's about investing the time. When you practice for an hour and a half, you know, 2 hours, when practice is over, you know, what are you doing to get better? Are you staying out there? Are you working on your techniques and your fundamentals? Are you studying film? Do you understand coverages? Do you understand how to read, the secondary? All those things make a difference when you want to play at an elite level in the NFL, because the game is so fast. Like, everybody's fat, everybody's bigger, everybody's stronger, everybody's faster. So you have to react faster. And, you know, a lot of times guys, you know, it's not because they're not physically gifted. It's because mentally they're not in a place to be able to play at that level.
Hmm. One of the things that, like, people talk about when it's NFL draft season and NBA draft season in particular is whether or not there should still be a draft, because there's been sort of a little movement to sort of try to get rid of the draft that I don't think will ever be successful necessarily, but there are reasons that they make for that. Like, Andre, do you think guys coming out, like, do you think that there should still be a draft, or should guys be able to pick where they're going to work, basically, like in a way that Dexter and I would, for example? Like, or is there a different way to kind of do this?
Yeah, I like the draft, man. I like the draft. I like the concept behind it. Hey, if you're not very good, you get a high pick. Problem is, I truly think this is the case on the college level, and I think it's the case on the pro level, is some guys can identify talent and some guys just can't. That's just what it is. And you talk about, like, next week is a draft and you got, you know, first round, right? And so one of the big positions that everybody takes in first round, you're going to get quarterbacks, right? And so everybody thinks because you draft a quarterback in the first round, this guy's going to be a good player. The reality is, Brian, I got this from you, man. I listened to one of you guys' deal, and you always about the numbers, right? There's a 14% success rate for a quarterback being picked in the first round. 14%. Huh. So chances are you pick a quarterback in the first round, he's not going to make it, right? Huh. And that success is being judged on, you know, does he make it to a second contract? Does he lead his team to the playoffs? Like, there's a lot of analytics behind it. But the reality is, most guys get it wrong. Most guys get it wrong, man. And so, I think being able to identify talent, and really know what it looks like. And to me, man, if you ain't been out there, if you ain't been around it, if you ain't played with it, if you ain't did it, you don't know, right? That's like me, stepping in and trying to, you know, to do you guys' job. Like, you guys are professionals at what you do. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's the case. That's the case in a lot of situations in college. You got, you know, there's some organizations that run that structure their recruiting in a way that a personnel guy is saying, hey, here's the guys we should take. And I'm like, I don't know. There's a guy out there. There's a guy that can tell me, you know, what receiver I should take. How can you tell me which guy to take? But that's part of the game, man. That's the way it's structured a lot of times. And, you know, sometimes that can be challenging.
What are your thoughts on this year's draft, right? Because this is a draft. You talked about quarterbacks being taken in the first round. And a lot of times teams are looking for that next quarterback. Who's the guy they can get? You just brought up the numbers. 14% success rate. That ain't good. Most of the guys you pick there to be your starting QB or franchise QB you're hoping for, it's going to be a bust, pretty much, to what you're saying. This is not considered, as I'm sure you know, Andre, this is not considered to be a strong quarterback draft. What do you just think about this draft overall and the talent that's there? And do you think there's some good talent in this draft? Or is it just about the good teams, the good organizations identifying that talent as they always do, and the bad teams not doing that?
Well, I think that's part of it. The good teams know how to identify the talent, and they not just identify the talent, right? You know, pick talent that fits into your schematic scheme set, right? You can't, you know, if a position needs a smaller scat type guy that can make people miss in space, you don't want to go pick a 6'4", 220-pound receiver. Like, he doesn't fit the bill. But I think there's good players. It's hard. There's good players every year. There's a lot of great players. And, you know, there are great players at the Division III level. There are great players at, you know, 1AA level that, you know, maybe just didn't get the exposure. All right. But they went somewhere. They worked hard. They developed. And now they put themselves in a position, you know, to have an opportunity to play at the next level. So, you know, it's hard to say when you don't sit back and watch the film yourself, right? There are certain things that I look at, like how he fires off the ball. What's his, can he put his foot in the ground? Can he change directions? What kind of hands does he have? How's his football IQ? When you talk to him, how articulate is he? Does he understand the game? So there's a lot of factors that go into it. And, you know, and most of these NFL teams are pretty thorough, man. They ask it everything. They're really, I tell my guys, they're trying to find something negative to say about you. Like, that's their job. Like, they are literally trying to find something negative to say. And so, some guys get it right. I mean, just look at the history of the NFL. Like, some guys take guys you never heard of them, but they play well because they're well coached, they're disciplined, and they're in the right spot. Right. And if you're fundamentally sound and you're smart, you're going to be in the right place. I can put you in position to make a play, you know, as a coach. But I got to depend on you to do those things.
Right.
Were there any knocks that you heard before the draft, before in your experience?
I was too short. I was too small, right? I was 5'9", 165 pounds. So, of course, the biggest knock on me was, well, you know, he can't handle the pounding, right? He's not big enough, right? But my strength was my speed, you know. So I was able to come in and, you know, I was all rookie my rookie year. I made the all rookie team. So, like, you know, it could be done. So that's why I tell guys, man, Tyler Lockett's a guy that I recruited that I coached at Kansas State. Tyler's a four-time Pro Bowler. Tyler's, you know, 5'9", 175 pounds. He's not very big. He's not fancy. He's not flashy like some of the receivers. But I tell you what, man, his work ethic is impeccable. He's extremely smart. His football IQ is through the roof, and he catches everything that you throw his way. And so that's why he's been able to make over $100 million and, you know, and be a, you know, NFL All Pro multiple times.
Dex don't know about that because he's 6'2 over there. I'm about your height. I'm about 5'8. You know what I'm saying? I'm a little shorter. But like, see, like, I had to ask the question because I remember, but like, also just going back into football reference, seeing 5'9", 165, I'm like, all my favorite football players are around the same size, but Dexter don't know about that.
What I do know, Andre, I knew that question was coming, and I knew that once you gave your height and the knocks that were against you when you were trying to come to the league, you are a Brian all-star. You were the kind of player Brian would gravitate to. You had the speed. You were short. People doubted you, and you overcame. That matters, too. We got to say that, too.
Look, I was a big Trendon Holiday guy. You know what I'm saying? He's like 5'5". Darren Sproles, I told you. That was one of my favorite
football players. Darren Sproles, my boy. Yeah, good dude.
I love watching Darren Sproles. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
These Sproles. Like, you can't put size on heart. You know what I'm saying?
That's a Brian motto right there. That's a Brian motto right there.
And D Sproles got heart. Tyler Lockett got heart. He's got the heart of a lion. You know what I'm saying? So guys like that, I'll take. And those are the intangibles you don't get to see. So when you're drafted a guy, like, you got to go sit down and talk to him, man. You got to understand, you know, where is he from? What kind of backgrounds he have? What kind of families he have? And all those things will tell you. And it's the same thing recruiting on a high school level. You know, you see some kids, they may be really good, and you see them and you talk to them, and then you watch their actions, and then you say, I don't think this guy's a great player, but I don't think he has the character that we need, right? I don't think he has the work ethic that we're going to need for him to really excel at this level. And, you know, and so guys like that, I like to turn away from, you know what I mean? But there's some guys in this profession that want to, they want to recruit those guys, no matter what. And sometimes those guys just aren't good for your program.
Fit matters. Chemistry matters. How did it feel for you? I'm going to follow up on Brian's question here. 5'9", 165 pounds. A lot of people told you were too small. You couldn't take the hits. How did it feel when you made the NFL and you had some success? I feel like if I was you, I'd be like, told y'all. Telling y'all this whole time.
Well, you know, it was something like that, man. But it's like I was just excited, you know, to have an opportunity to make it and play in the NFL. I mean, I knew I was good enough. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I was ready to put the work. I did have a chip on my shoulder. I ain't even going to lie to you. I had a little chip on my shoulder. And, you know, my rookie year, like I said, was able to, you know, make the all rookie team. We won the AFC championship, went to the Super Bowl, only team in Charger history to make it to the Super Bowl to this day.
Yep.
And so, you know, I'm pretty proud about that, to play a role in that.
You absolutely should be. No doubt about that, Andre. A couple more things before we get you out of here. NFL, we've seen a just lack of black head coaches. You've been in coaches. You know about the Brian Flores lawsuit that went down at the top of February. What do you think about what's going on in the NFL and also in college? Are we seeing any kind of change? Because it seems like it's really been slow. We've been talking about the same problems, especially as black people. I see you shaking your head on that. We've been talking about this for so long, Andre. Like, where is the change coming? And do you think this Brian Flores lawsuit is a step towards that change?
I mean, you know, we all know that there's a discrepancy in with, you know, the numbers with coaches. When you look at a team, whether it's college or pro, the vast, you know, a large majority of those guys, you know, are minority. But I mean, I guess it's just like any big profession, you know what I mean? Or any big, you know, company, right? We have those same things at Fortune 500 companies, right? Or, you know, yep. are there black, you know, senior VPs, right? You know, so it's frustrating because we dominate the profession as players, right? Yet we're not represented the same way from a coaching standpoint. And, you know, it could get Brian Flores, you know, I support Brian. I was at the combine about a month and a half ago or so, and I had an opportunity to meet him. And, I had never met him before in my life. But, you know, knowing the burden that he shouldered, that he took on his shoulders, I got a lot of respect for him. I tell you what, I just watched the scene, and a lot of coaches in the NFL have a lot of respect for him. I know guys that was on his staff at the university, with the Dolphins, and they speak highly of him. You know, just to respect, a lot of people, you know, came up and spoke to him. He's very intelligent. He seems like a man of his, you know, he seems like a man of great character and he has his story, you know what I mean? He has his truth. I wasn't there, right? I didn't get the text messages. I don't know, right. but I do know, a lot of shady stuff goes on in this profession, mm-hmm. both college and pro. Mm-hmm. That I know, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody has their own experience. Right. And if that's Brian Flores' experience, then, you know, I support him 100%.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Got to support him in his fight for that. Last question for us, Andre. What is next for you? Because you're in a bit of a transition period right now. Got some good credentials, NFL, did some coaching. What's next for Andre Coleman? What are you trying to do next?
To be honest with you, man, like right now, I'm focused on just, you know, taking a break. It's been difficult, man. Like we came through we just came through a pandemic, right? We had a social movement, right? That was tough, right? And you know, I was at the University of Texas. We had to deal with this Eyes of Texas. That like there's a lot of stuff that you know, that affected me, like as a man, as a black man, it affected me, right? That I kind of had to just wear it, right? And I had to be strong for my players. I had to stand strong for my players. It was difficult, you know. So I'm fortunate enough to be in a situation, man, that, you know, I'm still under contract, so I'm able to take some time right now and focus on my mental health, right? Get myself right. I'm working with a company called Vision Pursue, man, and they focus on a performance mindset, right? Just all the things that go through your mind, all the negative thoughts, and then learning how to deal with those, how to channel those, you know, and how to have the proper response, right? Because you know, it's challenging. There are a lot of young people, a lot of kids, and people like myself that have gone through a lot, you know, in the last, you know, 2 years, right? So I just want to focus on, you know, getting myself right. Focus on, you know, my kids, my daughters, man, being a better father, right? Using this opportunity to spend some time with them. We spend so much time on the road recruiting. Like, there's over a 50% divorce rate, man, because coaches just spend so much time. Like, it don't take that long to get it done, right?
But, right.
But you spend a lot of time, and so you sacrifice a lot of things, man. And family is one of the things that coaches sacrifice, right? A lot of people don't understand that side of the game. So I want to spend some time with my girls, man, and my grandbaby. I got a granddaughter. And then and focusing on my foundation. I got a foundation called Dream Village. Our mission is to use the influence of sports and entertainment and the culture to help at-risk kids. You know, we do things like, you know, targeted tutoring, you know, ACT, SAT prep, mentoring. So I'll spend some time and just, you know, and giving back and just being thankful, you know, for the many blessings that I've been able to have over the years, man.
No, man, that's beautiful. And I'm also really happy to hear you talk on mental health, because I think a lot of times we've been talking, having that conversation around athletes, but not necessarily coaches. And I do want to say, I know you were coaching at the University of Texas and the Ides of Texas song, and I don't understand why the people down there still want to keep singing that. They need to get rid of that. I'm going to say that. And I think that's obviously going to affect the players who are Black that are there in Austin, and also the people that are coaching there too. And so I appreciate you speaking about the mental health, Andre, because it's important, especially for us as men, Black men, Latino men, like Brian, for us to speak about that, you know. So I like hearing that from a coach around athletes. So thank you for talking on that. We appreciate you, man. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you guys, man. You guys, like I said, you guys do an awesome job, man. And you guys really make it cool. I'll come back anytime, man. I really enjoyed spending some time with you guys.
Oh, man, we definitely have to have you back, man. We really like you, especially when Brian, you know, you're into the Brian Club. You're in that height range, you know what I mean? So he's definitely going to want you back. I'm telling you, man, you bring the energy, you get hyped. Just send us a message. Brian will be like, yeah, let's bring Andre back. He got that same energy. It'll be good.
Like,
that
NFL season will be here before you know it. Training camp, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so we'd love to have you back on again, man, to come and kick it with us, everybody. That is Andre Coleman. You can definitely follow him on Twitter. Check out his foundation and all the great work that he is doing. Andre, thank you again for joining us on Ain't Hard to Tell podcast, man.
I appreciate you, brothers, man. You guys keep doing your thing. It ain't hard to tell you boys are the baddest out there, man.
We like that.